What is God calling you to do? What is the one thing you were born to do? Are you truly doing what you're called to do? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Callings for Life at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose.
I wish we taught more in our schools about the Islamic faith. I wish we talked about all the great confessional faiths. And what people don't realize is one of my avocations is theology.
It's interesting that the sort of like traditional American leftism is clashing with, you know, millennial progressivism.
The Reformation was not a revolution. And thinking we have to take on and imitate the worship styles and practices of non-sacramental Christians is very dangerous.
I think the first thing is just knowing the arguments about the truth of the matter. That's why shows like yours, Issues Etc., are so important, because you're equipping people to make the argument.
Iowa State University computer science graduates love Issues Etc.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
I cannot imagine the task that those who run these gigantic social media platforms have in front of them, curating all this content when you have millions of users every day, all day long, all night long, and they are saying things, they're making assertions, they're posting things, they're reposting things, they're tweeting things, they're retweeting things. You've got the president there in the mix as well, keeping the pot thoroughly stirred. And you're supposed to police all of it and make sure that false news items, fake news, whatever you want to call it, don't make it into the circulatory system, or that all those bots that are out there trying to sway people's minds don't do their bot thing. How do you even go about doing that? I mean, you have to automate it in some way. There has to be some human judgment, but why do conservatives feel like they are so often on the wrong side of the censoring or the canceling or the muting or the shadow banning? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, July the 29th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about conservative advocacy journalism, Tim Tebow and Twitter, with Terry Mattingly, founder and editor of Get Religion. Then a little bit later, we'll study the hymn Thy Strong Word with Pastor Will Whedon, host of the 15-minute daily verse-by-verse Bible study produced by Lutheran Public Radio called The Word of the Lord Endures Forever. Joining us to discuss conservative advocacy journalism, Tim Tebow and Twitter, Terry Mattingly, senior fellow at the Overbury Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
So let's talk a little bit about the bigger context for this. Why should religious people be concerned about the clash that is shaping up against between big tech and the U.S. Congress?
Let me give you a strange image, but I need to give a nod here both to the great media theorist Marshall McLuhan, but also Peggy Noonan in a classic column like 2 days after 9/11. No, I'm sorry, this was not her 9/11 piece. It was on another time, but anyway, you get the idea. She wrote this column that basically said, your child is a fish, and your child is swimming in a current. And then she just read a bunch of bizarre, crazy items from the news. Things that were, this was during the Clinton administration, and it was totally messed up stuff, and it was bizarre stuff, and it was entertainment stuff, and it was just all kinds of things. And she said, why was she interested in this? She said, well, your child is swimming in this stream. And quoting Marshall McLuhan, she said, basically, if you asked a fish to describe its life, it wouldn't include water as a part of its discussion. And the reason the fish wouldn't mention water is it can't see the water because the water is everywhere. The water is what the fish is swimming in. So what does that have to do with Christians and big tech? I would argue that right now, cyberspace and the world of the internet and the world of social media is the ocean, the water in which most of our culture is swimming. And that to some degree, even things that would make it onto what we normally would call big cable channels or CBS or something like that, that the people that are producing those shows and their judgment about what's a good show and what's a bad show and what we put on the air and what we don't put on the air, that to some degree, all of that is being shaped by the world of Google, Facebook, Amazon, Apple. That big tech, to some degree, is like a public utility that is producing the air we breathe and the water in which we swim. It's producing the atmosphere and the elements in which we live our lives. This would take me all the way back to when I was at Denver Seminary in the early 90s, and I was trying to get future ministers to stop and think about the power of cable television, was what we were mainly talking about now, back then. But what is the power of cable television compared with the internet? I mean, cable television is an awfully powerful thing. And back then, there were 3 to 5 TVs, you know, in every home. But how many screens are in the typical suburban home today? I don't even know where to count. And lately, people have given up trying to calculate as much screen time, calculate the amount of screen time that people have, because they don't know how to calculate it when people are using more than one screen at the same time. What do these topics, these big tech people, what do they have to do with living a moral Christian life, or even just a sane life, or even just a comprehensible life in our culture? I would say they're the water we're swimming in. And as such, religious people need to be asking lots of questions about them, and also lots of questions about how we use them and abuse them and how we unthinkingly accept them into our life. I realize these are huge questions, but every once in a while something comes along where the flow of the news on this topic freezes for a second and we have a chance to stop and look at it. And that's what's going on right now on Capitol Hill with the hearings of the big tech czars, which I understand are still going on even as you and I speak.
What happened with football player Tim Tebow and his Twitter account recently that caught the attention of at least some of the media?
Well, first of all, I don't know if I would have written about that story on any given day because the media didn't treat it as a story. But when I saw that come across my Twitter feed, I think it was, I was just fascinated by the timing of this. If you wanted a human being who could stand for some of this conflict, Tim Tebow would have to be it. I mean, so much of the things that we argue about in terms of conservatives being canceled or conservatives being muted, you had an impressive list of alternative verbs back there. I want to applaud you on that. You had like 5 different verbs. Censor is one we need to discuss because censor is the word people need to stop using. We could talk about that in a second. But Tim Tebow put out this typically sweet, caring Tim Tebow message, trying to encourage people during hard times. A little bit of the message, this could be your time. That breakthrough could be tomorrow or it could be next year. But you have the opportunity to turn however you're being tested into a testimony. So many heroes were wounded deeply before they were greatly used. Such a typical positive Tim Tebow message. So it's kind of weird when you see that message to then look immediately below the screenshot that someone took. The following media includes potentially sensitive content. Change settings. And the fact that something about this video message or something about that tweet that contained the video message set off some algorithm at Twitter that got this thing canceled. And your mind boggles to try to think of what that is. I mean, Tebow in the past might have been able to get shot at if he was doing something related to abortion, or let's say because of his incredibly strong commitment to working with people with mental and physical handicaps, you could even see him doing a tweet, some sort of really strong tweet about the abortion of Down syndrome babies in Europe. You could see that maybe catching their attention, or maybe Tim Tebow talking about getting married and having a message for all of those virgins out there who are trying to hang on until someday they can get married. I could see several different Tim Tebow topics punching a few buttons in social media, but not this one. And so to have this little mini Tim Tebow dust-up come with him getting banned on Twitter for a while, and then, of course, Twitter said, we're sorry, bad algorithm, this was a mistake, it's fixed, we've put it back up. Stop and think for a second. What was in the algorithm that got set off by this post? I mean, I can't find a single word in it. There's not even any way to interpret it as being about Donald Trump. So I wondered why this Tim Tebow story didn't get covered by some media, because to me it would be just a strikingly bizarre example of all of the test cases for conservative thought being canceled that I'm sure dominated half of these hearings today. Because basically the Democrats have one set of complaints about big tech, and Republicans have another. And this is one of those rare cases where I think both sides of this debate are absolutely right and have every right to be asking the questions that they're asking.
Okay, you mentioned it. Let's talk about it. The Blaze did report on the Tebow algorithm conflict, and the headline reads, Twitter reportedly censors moving Bible messages from Tim Tebow sensitive content. You want to take issue with that word censors?
Well, censor means the government stops the pre-publication of material. It means stopping the publication of something at the source before it comes out. And if you misuse the technical and legal term censor, you're going to lose some respect with the people with whom you're dialoguing. So I have, for decades now, I've tried to get Christians to avoid using the word censor when they're talking about Hollywood or even book publishers. The government can censor a book. A publishing company is not censoring a book when it chooses not to publish it. Does that make a distinction that's helpful?
Well, I think the other thing is there was a better verb handy, and that's flags, because what they did, they flagged his tweet with that little warning.
Right. Well, but then also I believe they took it down. I believe it actually vanished for a while, and then they fixed it and put it back up. So to some degree, this video did get canceled, to use the popular word, which takes a little bit of explanation, but I think it's a perfectly appropriate word for what happened here.
We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of social media, Tim Tebow, and Twitter. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. When we come back, we're going to talk about an observation from Mark Hemingway having to do with journalists, perhaps for their better good, for their own good, staying off social media.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The the best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Independent and in the black for 12 years and running, you're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
Your church's chrismons are from the 80s. They're made of styrofoam, their glitter is shedding, and they're held together with toothpicks. Now is the perfect time to replace them with Ad Cruisman's Christmas in July sale. Participating artists have discounted their products, so stock up on jewelry, crucifixes, art, church banners, music, greeting cards, and more. Discounts range from 10 to 50% off. Visit us at adcrucem.com to take advantage of the sale. That's adcrucem.com.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about media coverage of social media, Tim Tebow, and Twitter. He's senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi, author of the Weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. All right, Terry, let's take up a couple other subjects. Twitter recently did remove, if I'm mistaken, all QAnon accounts. Refresh our memory. What's QAnon? What's its tie-in with the religion angle?
Okay, well, QAnon is this great conspiracy theory that says there is this retired or hidden security official, or maybe even it's the President of the United States, who keeps sending out information from inside the state, the government, the state powers that be, telling us what's really going on in the world. And QAnon, I've done several different podcasts with various organizations recently about evangelicals and QAnon, all of them linked to that Atlantic Monthly cover that you and I talked about a couple of weeks ago. And QAnon is a very important subject. What links all of this to me is not just whether QAnon has been banned or canceled by big tech. What QAnon is all about to me is how the church still doesn't want to think about technology and still doesn't want to think and be concerned about the role that technology plays in our lives, in our families, in our homes, etc. And you're not going to be able to stop QAnon because the internet can't be stopped. I mean, there will be some niche, some form, some way to put QAnon material out there on the internet, even if Google doesn't want to handle it, or Facebook doesn't want to handle it, or Twitter, or whoever. In fact, in many ways, if you drive it out of the big four, you make QAnon even more dangerous. Because people will say, look, they've banned QAnon, we're being persecuted again, let's go find it. Which means at that point, QAnon goes into some place that's even less regulated. I mean, have regulations and safety features and stuff stopped child pornography on the internet? Obviously not. To me, the issue that you and I have discussed many times is direct. That's directly linked to this. When we look at it from the viewpoint of pastors and parents, is smartphones. Trying to get the role of smartphones and smartphone addiction and even video game addiction under control in the life of even the most conservative and cross-countercultural families in our churches. These things are just too big, right? Can you live without Google? Could I live without Gmail? Could half the people in America find their way to where they're going now without automated map systems provided by big tech? And they all have competing versions. So, okay, I'm making a bid for independence. I'm going to stop using Google and I'm going to go to Apple? right? I mean, that's your other option, or one of your other options. So my point here is this is another example of a tech subject that simply is too big to ignore. And the fact that it is so big and it is so omnipresent, A, makes it a huge story for the media, or should make it a huge story for the media, and B, it should make it a huge, undeniable story for the church if the church will just keep asking those three questions that I used to use at Denver Seminary and I've used ever since as a tech-friendly way of defining Christian discipleship. And those three questions are concerning the people in the pews or the people in your community. How do they spend their time? How do they spend their money? And how do they make their decisions? Now, does big tech have anything to do with those three questions?
Absolutely.
I don't think the Amish could get away from those three questions in terms of big tech. I'm reminded when everybody was worried about the internet shutting down on January the 1st, 2000, there were actual committees in Amish communities to try to figure out how to get around the fact that their stores depended totally on MasterCard and on card swipe machines. If you don't see any irony in that, you're not paying attention. This is the air we breathe and the water in which we swim. That's even more true of our children. And at some point, the church needs to pay attention to these battles and these discussions and take them seriously.
About a month ago, Terry, there was a little event on Twitter that I think some dubbed Twexit, where conservative journalists on Twitter, lawmakers, other punditry out there, very publicly, they didn't leave Twitter, but they joined Parler, which is a microblogging site, just like Twitter, has about 1.5 million users as opposed to Twitter's 321 million worldwide. But they did it very publicly on Twitter to make a point about what they thought was a bias against conservatives on that platform. What are your thoughts on that?
It's, first of all, I think it's hilarious. This is one of those cases where the left and right end up saying the same thing for different reasons. The left is constantly saying the big four, the big tech folks, they're not a monopoly. We don't need to worry about them the way we worried about the railroad tycoons. If conservatives are unhappy, they should just go start their own companies. Right. And compete with Google, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, compete with Amazon.com, et cetera. Parler was a case of conservatives saying, okay, we'll do that. Okay, do you have a Parler account?
I do. I did say when I joined, I publicly said on Twitter, I don't think this is going to amount to much.
I've tried Parler, and every time I look over there, it shows us something about conservatives in our world today. And conservative blue check mark people and just conservative culture. And that is that they really seem to think that ultimately they will need to vote in the kingdom. That basically there is nothing to the world of conservatism, with the exception of a few artists like Doug Tenapel or someone like that. There's nothing to the world of conservatism except politics. Parler absolutely bores me to death because there's nobody there that I can find who cares anything about anything except politics. I put a couple of things up on Parler that were my usual stuff, my columns mixing religion and culture and politics and family life and, you know, all the things I write about. How many people have even looked at my pieces? Next to none. Now, that says something. Maybe I'm just not that popular with conservatives, but I think it has more to do with the fact that I'm just not very political. And what I choose to focus on and write about has much more to do with the First Amendment and free speech and quality journalism and all that stuff than it has to do with partisan politics. So to me, Parler was a classic example of, A, you really can't start at this point in the game. You can't start another medium that's going to directly compete with Twitter, at least not with the people who are so totally Twitter-dependent. Yet at the same time, it shows me the ongoing weakness of conservative culture and Christian religious culture, which is they can't seem to think about any content outside their own box and discussions that have to do with subjects outside their own box. And Parler is like this tiny little echo chamber for people who worship at the altar of conservative politics. And that's their world. Twitter has, obviously, the Twitterverse is, I would say, dominated primarily by Acela Zone progressives and whatever else. There's lots of other stuff going on Twitter. And there's a lot of people there I enjoy reading. I don't follow a whole lot of people. I follow lots of people who read interesting things, and I like to hear what they have to say about what they're reading. It's where I get a lot of news tips and a lot of other things. So, yeah, Parler didn't impress me at all. But do you see what I'm saying? That Parler is just such a symptom of so many of these subjects that are all tied up in the power of big tech.
Our mutual friends Mark and Molly Hemingway were kind enough to speak at last week's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference. And in the course of a Q&A with them, Mark Hemingway made the statement that if he knew of a straight news publication where the journalists and the news writers were required to stay off social media, he would be on board in a second. What does that tell you?
Well, I understand his concern and I understand what he's saying. At the same time, though, I think what he's saying is all of these journalists who get on Twitter and shoot their mouths off. And in many ways, that's sort of helpful in that it helps consumers know more about the mindset of these people. It's a vision into their inner thoughts and working, the way their brains work. So I understand what he's saying, but to me it's useful to see the left and the right being candid, sometimes more candid than they need to be. But the main thing I think I would disagree with Mark, and that would be an interesting conversation for the two of us to have, is I think Twitter right now is a very important tool, not to find out what the news is, but to find out what the news might be and find out what people are saying about subjects that are related to the news. I'm not sure right now you could understand what happens in the Acela zone between Washington, D.C. and Boston, Acela being the really expensive train, which before coronavirus, everybody rode back and forth. One of Molly's biggest stories, if I remember correctly, was overhearing some stuff being said on a train between New York and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can understand what's going on in American life, for worse and for better, and I intentionally reverse those, without following Twitter. I just think you need to follow small bites of Twitter and deliberately find the voices who are kind of in the middle. My ongoing standard is to find people who make people on both sides uncomfortable. And so that's why someone like a David French appeals to me so much. So Mark and I could discuss that. I know totally what he's saying. But we've got bigger issues to discuss in the media right now than people shooting off on Twitter.
Terry Mattingly is senior fellow at the Overby Center at the University of Mississippi. He's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion, and he's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thank you very much for your time.
Glad to be here.
When we come back, we're going to turn to a hymn study. In six stanzas, it takes us from creation to the end of the world and what Robin Lever has called the greatest doxology written in the 20th century, the hymn, Thy Strong Word. What is God calling you to do? What is the one thing you were born to do? Are you truly doing what you're called to do? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose. It's published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about Callings for Life at issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July, Callings for Life, God's Plan, Your Purpose.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR20. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
Education and edification. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Concordia University Chicago is committed to keeping college affordable for all, and especially for LCMS Lutherans. We have scholarships available specifically for students who are LCMS members. This is Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia Chicago, asking you to encourage your student to check out Concordia Chicago at cuchicago.edu. And if you are interested in supporting these scholarships, please find us online at foundation@cuchicago.edu.
In many ways, St. Matthew Lutheran Church in Bel Air, Maryland is just like any other Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod Church. They have worship services each Sunday and reach out to their community, but one thing they don't do is pay their electric bill. Hello, this is Rahema Kavuga, Synod Relations Manager of Lutheran Church Extension Fund. And if you want to hear what St. Matthew actually did to eliminate their electric bill, just visit interesttime.org. That's interesttime.org.